And speaking of tech, if anyone is watching the live stream and wants to tweet to us, the hashtag is creating the future. That is the only place that we're going to be looking, is on Twitter at that hashtag. So we hope you will join us, and join us for everything. If you're watching and you want to tweet, join us for our saying hello and our introductions. Tell us who you are and where you are, and join us for reflections at the end and everything in between. We are anticipating a couple of people who will be joining us as we go along here, but as is our custom, let's all introduce ourselves. Tell us where you are. If you'd like to talk about your weather, great. If you don't want to talk about your weather, that's totally fine. So we're gonna say where we are, and also a land acknowledgement of whose traditional lands we are on. And then something that is awesome in your lives. So who would like to start by telling us who you are, where you are, whose traditional lands those are, and something that has been fun and awesome in your life? And I love the fact that it always takes us, you would think that we've never asked these questions before. It always takes us a while to warm up.
Okay, I'll go first then, everyone. So first of all, I think good morning, given that most of you are still morning. It's 6 p.m. here. So I'm Carl. I'm Carl Wilding. I'm based out here in the UK, just outside London. The lands sort of statement doesn't really work for us because, like, we are, I guess, you know, on our indigenous sort of lands here. And as I think I said before, our role, unfortunately, in our past has been to occupy other people's lands rather than someone occupy us. But something awesome. I'm sort of starting out in the world of sort of being a freelance consultant and so on, and I'm learning a whole new skill set and learning different ways of sort of doing things. And what started off being really scary, I'm sort of finding actually isn't so much scary, it's just different. And I'm learning a whole bunch of new stuff as I'm sort of going along. And that's pretty awesome, actually. You know, you can be in your 50s and you're still learning.
Wonderful. Awesome. Who wants to go next? Eli, would you like to go? Would you like to introduce Jason for us?
Absolutely. So thank you for having me here. My name is Eli Angote. Jason is my good friend who I met in Hawaii. He is on the Big Island of Hawaii. We met through the Zebras Unite community. And he resonates with this work because he wants to help move the Big Island forward economically. He wants to make sure that, you know, progress is spreading around to everyone. So thanks for being here, Jason. Myself, I am in Alameda, California, formerly occupied by the Ohlone people. And something awesome for me is that last night I was in Hayward, California, and I went to have dinner at somebody who is my third cousin that I met through 23andMe. So I got to meet him and his wife and his two kids and his brother's girlfriend, a wife actually. And we had this like epic 4 or 5 hour dinner with people who are my blood relatives, thanks to the power of 23andMe. So that's my really insane awesome. I'm still processing it. And I'm really grateful that I was able to reconnect with this kind of part of my family that I just had never met.
Oh my gosh, how awesome is that? Wow. Wow, 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 wow. That is hey. Jason, would you like to tell us just a little bit about you and what led you to say yes to Eli when he invited you?
good morning. It's 7 a.m., just past 7 a.m. here in beautiful Hawaii. So my name is Jason Ueki. I am calling in from the beautiful Big Island or Hawaii Island of Hawaii. of course, home to the native Hawaiian population, of which I am not, but this is the island that has the most native Hawaiian population in the state. So the weather here today looks like my background. It's absolutely fantastic this morning and right around 70 right now. So I have joined you today because Eli had invited me, and Eli's a stand-up individual. And so I thought if Eli's recommending that I join today, I will be here. So I'm always trying to expand my network, trying to look for ideas to bring to my community. And of course, people in Hawaii, because of our isolation and kind of our social and racial and economic diversity in close proximity, I think we have a lot to offer the world. So thanks for having me.
Wonderful. Wonderful. We're really, really happy you're here. Mr. Lay.
Good morning, everyone. Good afternoon, Carl. And nice to meet you, Jason. Yeah, I am Vu. I'm in Seattle, which is on Duwamish in Coast Salish land. And my awesome is I got childcare all squared away for the summer. And it's in person for both kids. Their ages 8 and 5. And the childcare places are about a mile away. So it's really nice. The scramble for childcare. It's rough every year.
Yeah. Yay. Oh, that's huge. That is just tremendous. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Jackie.
Yes, good afternoon. I am joining the call from Southern Michigan, which are the lands of the Wyandotte Nation and Anishinaabeg. As Hildy said, I'm Jackie, and something awesome in my life right now is I have my first ever garden, and one of my strawberry plants has a strawberry that is almost ripe. So that will be the first thing that I will harvest from my garden, hopefully. And so it's very exciting.
That is an awesome, awesome. That is just wonderful. And to have a strawberry be your first thing is that's very cool. Mr. Petropoulos, I will mute mine so that you can go.
My name is Dimitri Petropoulos. I'm broadcasting from beautiful, very, very, very sunny Tucson, Arizona, the sort of traditional lands of the Tohono O'odham peoples. And before that, folks who we call Hohokam, but we don't really know who they are, you know, that have traveled these lands. I am thrilled to be here today. My awesome is that this time of year, for a very short period of time, some of the cacti called night blooming cereus bloom, but only at night. And they go crazy, these beautiful, gigantic flowers. And if you don't catch them early enough in the morning, unless you want to go out and catch them at night, the flowers close up and they're gone. And Hildy has been encouraging me to get up early enough to go out. And there's a big, huge cactus at the end of our street that every year blooms. And I got to see them the other day and probably saw almost a dozen of them in bloom. And there had been many dozen every night. So it's that prolific in terms of how it blooms. So my awesome is how amazing nature is. And it's good to be in a point to be able to catch it.
And for those of you who have not been part of these meetings, Dimitri and I handing the microphone back and forth is so that it doesn't echo and reverb. So every time one of us talks, we're handing that back and forth. Yeah, the cactus are just absolutely beautiful. And this variety, each bloom is about this big. And they're just beautiful. And they bloom at night because it's so hot. And so at night when it cools down, that's when all of the bats pollinate them and all of the night creatures pollinate them, which is very cool. I am Hildy Gottlieb. I am also in Tucson, Arizona, where it is blazing hot. a couple things. One of the more interesting things is that people think that here in the desert, very much like I'm sure that they assume about you, Jason, and Hawaii, is that you have no seasons. And we gauge seasons by traditionally what we see in other parts of the world where there's those four very distinct seasons. Tucson actually has five seasons. They call it dry summer and wet summer. And in order to get the monsoons that we get in July and August, the desert floor has to get very, very, very hot to be able to interact with the moisture. And so June is always the hellacious month. This week is a delightful 111, 113. That's Carl going up to about 45 and dry and just absolutely dry. And don't let anybody fool you when they say it's a dry heat. 113 is still 113. So yeah, that's just sort of the explanation, the nature part, Dimitri part of why it's okay that it's this hot. It has to be this hot for us to actually get the rains that we get. My awesome is that I spent the entire weekend quilting a patchwork quilt for our new grandbaby and reading a novel. And it was just, I read a novel from start to finish. It was just the most delightful, relaxing weekend. And so that's my awesome. I tried real desperately not to think a cogent thought this weekend. And that was pretty, pretty cool. So we will be diving in today to really take the first step into this integrity body, into the work of this body. What we've talked about for the past several meetings is, okay, how will we do that work? And today is sort of the first test of that, which is pretty cool. Let's just recap a little bit about where we've been and what we mean by integrity body for folks who haven't been part of this journey. I apologize. It's been a long road trying to figure out what is the structure of an organization that will actually propel change. And looking from that structure and realizing it can't be hierarchical, it needs to be networked. Not even just local decision-making, but really just networked so that folks are working together and playing together and finding each other and finding resources and making decisions on their own using catalytic thinking and abiding by the values of the organization. And when we talk about the work, it's really any work that furthers our mission of systems change. And so the question that became very clear was, well, if folks are making decisions on their own and the board's not really making decisions, what will the board be doing? And what we have come to is that the board will be ensuring we are walking the talk of our values with integrity, that we're meeting the expectations of folks who have expectations of us, doing what we've committed to do and ensuring that we are doing that. That includes both walking the talk of our values and compliance with the law. And as we've talked about in the past couple of board meetings, that compliance piece is about ESB, and the values piece is really everything. And so what we talked about last time, which was pretty exciting, was, okay, if that's the role, how will we know? What do we want? So you know, I shared with those of you who are on this call a short video about what we see as a next step that Creating the Future is going to be stepping into. When it comes to knowing if that is that those decisions were made with integrity, how will we know? And the result of that conversation was we will know if by having a conversation rooted in catalytic thinking, that if that conversation is rooted in catalytic thinking and if it winds up that the project seems to be rooted in catalytic thinking, that it adheres to our values, that we'll do that via conversation. It won't be a checklist and it won't be a form that anybody needs to fill out. Like everything, it will be human. It will be a conversation. And so today is when we're gonna sort of put that to the test. We have shared with everyone here the short video about what we see as next. For those who may be watching who haven't seen that, that what's next is really taking what has been our way of being, which is we are a grounds for experimenting. We're grounds for experimenting with systems change and catalytic thinking, where we apply catalytic thinking to a particular situation and we see what happens. And then we share what we learned from that with the world. So really the experimenting and sharing has been our way of being, doing that very openly. Just like this meeting is open, anyone can join, anyone can watch and tweet. What we are talking about doing is formalizing that way of being into actual programs where a cohort can get together around one of the topics that we're going to be experimenting with. So not just the experiments our board is doing around integrity, but looking at communication strategy or new program development or accounting or any of the systems that we're going to wind up talking about here at Creating the Future. And a cohort could be part of that conversation, get the experience of applying catalytic thinking to something they may be thinking about, but they don't have to worry about doing it themselves first. They can experiment on us as the guinea pigs first. It is very, very similar to what we have been doing. We're just formalizing it as a program. And people can there'll be an online community where people can talk to each other about, well, I tried this and I tried that in my organization, but it didn't work. How did it go when you did it? It'll really be a learning environment for folks who want to explore whatever topic it is we happen to be exploring. The first two that I can see coming up will be hiring and all the stuff around hiring. Roles and functions and job descriptions and compensation, all of that stuff. Anyone who wants to be part of a cohort that is looking at those issues, again, we'll be the guinea pig, but we'll be facilitating that with catalytic thinking so that everyone can be joining in with deep intention. The other big thing that I think is going to be a very, very first one is really looking at online communities, period. If there's going to be learning communities with each of these cohorts, what makes a good online community? And especially, and this is a alignment with our values thing, as far as I'm concerned, big time, is migrating our learning communities away from Facebook and putting in the technology to do our own. Because getting away from Facebook seems like a really big values-based thing that we need to do. That's, does anyone have anything that you would add to your observations about what those, I guess for Vu and for Eli, for Jackie, for Carl, you were part of the meeting last time, Dimitri also. How do you feel? How is it feeling stepping into we've decided what this is going to look like. Now we're going to be doing it. Did I describe it right? Is there anything that I missed? And B, anything that you would add to what I said?
Great.
You are muted.
It's okay. Do you want the mic?
No. I could just speak loudly. I think you've covered it really well, Hilde. I think that the description of what we talked about is there, and the, I don't know, excitement, the going into new territory for this kind of endeavor. I mean, I'm very excited about that, but I just wanted to let you know, yes, you did.
Thank you. Carl?
Just a sense that, first of all, I think you were right in terms of sort of how you summarized what we said last time. And I think one of my recollections from last time, and you mean I've brought it with me for this meeting as well, is that we're finding our way. And we don't have you mean, if someone's going to watch this and sort of like, if you see a stumble from time to time, that's a feature, it's not a bug. We're sort of trying to work out what to sort of do here.
Yeah, very well put. Very well put. When we teach catalytic thinking, we talk about this as a practice, not a perfect. And we are definitely just putting our toe in. Yeah. Anyone else? Any reflections about what we talked about last time and how you're feeling about it, or anything you'd add to what I said?
So first of all, I apologize that my lower half might be disappearing because I wore a shirt that is the same color as my green screen. But I think you nailed it, Hildy, in many ways. Only thing I'm thinking about that's kind of been, I'm wondering is, you've got this, as you said, community on Facebook of people who are doing this work and living this work, and I have never been able to see or connect with those people. Just wondering if there's an intermediary place where, you know, these two could combine, the people who are on the board of this organization and the other greater, you know, catalytic thinking community. I think there could be a lot of, you know, positive effects of just being around those people and connecting with them. So
awesome.
And so I can think of that, I've been wondering about, like, it would be great to kind of link up with other folks. The greater community could kind of all merge.
You will have to be part of that cohort then. We will definitely talk about that. That's great. So I am reminded, there was a movie a long time ago, Dimitri, the name of it, The Baron, The Adventures of Baron Munchausen, that Robin Williams was in. And this is like a 20-30 year old, we're dating ourselves, but it's an old movie. And Robin Williams is a disembodied head floating through the cosmos. And every time your shirt disappears, Eli, I picture you as just this disembodied Eli floating through the cosmos. And it's not distress, it's just joyful. So I like it. You're just there. It's perfect.
I gotta look up that movie now. I gotta go look into that.
And I will tell you, Eli, you're not gonna, don't search for Robin Williams, because it's an uncredited.
Oh, is it really?
Yes, it's uncredited in there, and it's absolutely hilarious. So
is it the Baron of Munchausen? What did you call it? The Adventures.
I think the Adventures of Baron Munchausen, something like that. Yeah. Yeah.
I'll check it out.
And don't ask me how to spell Munchausen. I also want to really acknowledge Carl and Jackie, both of you. The notes that you took, and Carl, I know you're always apologizing that they were not good, but they were great. The notes that you guys took that led to the summary of those two meetings, those were great notes, and just bled right into a couple of little tweaks here and there just to fit them in a blog post. But it was really a gift to just be able to take them wholesale and import them. So thank you for that. And I see Justin is trying to get online. I know that he's been having some internet stuff. He's on holiday. So, so what we're really looking at today, I should have deleted those off of. Well, the notes, the agenda you got had some remnants on it, so let's just cross those off. I don't know why. How will the board approach our integrity role? And so looking at the video that I shared with you all, the way that I've summarized it here, what questions do you have? What conversation do you want to have about where this fits into catalytic thinking? What would you like to know from me? And Justin, can you hear us?
Yep, I'm good.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Do you want to say hello and tell us where you are?
Sure. I'm Justin Pollock. I am currently located in Phippsburg, Maine. So that's about 30 minutes outside of Portland on the coast. And I'm here with some dear friends of mine with a little reunion as we try to come to terms with a new reality. And I didn't have a chance to check and see which land upon which I am sitting that has been shared previously, but I can try and scrounge that up and put it in the chat.
Wonderful, wonderful. I'm glad you could be here. Really glad you could be here. It looks quite delightful. Wherever you are, it looks quite delightful.
And this is the bad view. If I did, I'll have to send a little picture of the view that we have off the back of the house.
Yes, we will definitely want to see that. And I think you're right. Eli has put in the chat that you're looking a little bit like Anderson Cooper today. The sun glinting off your hair. I like it. I like it a lot. But we were just diving in, Justin, to look at applying catalytic thinking to the video that I had sent to you all. We had said last time that we wanted to check in and see if things were aligned in integrity by having conversations to see how they fit with catalytic thinking and how they fit with our values. And especially, I think today, given that we're looking at a big new project, some of the conditions for success, probably for the participants, as well as internally, what do we need to have in place in order to make that work? So I open it up to you all. Where do you wanna, and Carl made clear, Justin, as we're starting, that we're finding our way, that this is new territory for us, and we're stepping into something new. So where would you guys like to go in terms of checking in to see whether how this was developed or how it fits with catalytic thinking? Where would you like to go?
I'll try and kick off then to get the conversation going. So if our role now, is about integrity, okay, with any new project that we sort of think of or sort of come along, I wonder if we need to start, I wonder if we need some sort of yardstick or something like that. I don't literally mean a measure, but we've got to think about, okay, well, what are the characteristics of this new program or whatever? And how do we judge that in relation to sort of our values and our integrity? I'm not asking you to sort of justify it, but I'm just saying, I think what the board will probably have to think about in future is, okay, well, when these new things sort of come along, I think we've got to do more than just have nice conversations. I think, you know, and if we're going to sort of implement the integrity ideal, there's got to be a little bit of bite. I guess one of the things that we've never really talked about is, you know, how does the board deal with a situation where, for example, we don't think it's right? Because, you know, we're good people and we like each other and we agree most of the time, if not all of the time.
Yep.
Well, I guess I would go back to, you know, the conversation that we were having last time around. We are creating a space to ensure that those conversations of intent, values, and, you know, advantageous conditions sort of have been thought through. And so I guess my natural inclination is to say, and at this point in time, most of the burden is on Dimitri and Hilby, but the question I would ask is, in what way do you see this initiative advancing the values and goals of creating the future? And then and to be honest, I mean, this is a little bit of a meta conversation, but then I'm just listening to see if, rather than to actually judge, I'm just listening. Do I feel like it in my mind, does it align with those things? And then there's further conversation. And then I think, and I see just the one more sentence, Carl, and then I'll shut up. Then the subsequent question I would ask is, well, you know, tell us a little bit about the conditions that you think are necessary for this to be successful. And what are the thoughts about how those conditions are going to be put in place, or what may be needed that hasn't been considered yet?
So I put my hand up because I really liked how Justin framed that then, because I almost sort of started in a traditional board mindset with someone comes to me and I've got to sort of try and judge sort of, do I think it sort of fits our values? Where I really like the way that Justin framed that was tell us, because I'm sort of worried about whether or not like we should sort of do it almost. And Justin is sort of saying, no, a much more positive way of talking about it, which is tell us how this furthers the values. So rather than starting from a sort of a compliance mindset of I'm worried this isn't right for us, it sort of starts from a strength mindset that this is going to be something that builds upon what we've got. So our challenge now is to use our integrity to maximize the potential and how much it builds upon what we're doing.
Could you guys not be so smart that I want to write down every single word you say?
Hildy, we're recording it. You don't have to write it down.
No, but my brain only works if it comes out of my pen. It's like, it's the writer thing. It only works if it comes out of my pen. Wow, I love that, how it further, those words that you used, Carl, tell us how this furthers our values. And I'm happy to play with that a little bit if you want to. Anybody else have any other thoughts?
Sorry, at the risk of sort of like dominating the conversation, just that you just made me think that all the stuff that, you know, I not all the stuff, but some of the stuff that I see in the UK here that's borrowed from the ABCD Institute in the US, right, that whole thing about start with what's strong, not with what's wrong. And I just wonder if, you know, to what extent, you know, I mean, that's part of our integrity role as a board, is to start from the position of positivity and always to look at the strengths of what something comes to us and think about how we use our integrity to build on the strengths.
What's going through my mind is the idea that this is a support entity, supporting efforts that are happening close to this entity and far away from this entity. So applying the integrity litmus test to be able to ask the questions that Carl's asking and the questions that Justin's asking, but to think of it from the perspective of supporting those efforts as opposed to policing those efforts. From a nuance standpoint, I'm just thinking about that. That's really important to think about it in that sense.
Yeah, that's, I love those words. It's just a support role, not a policing role. Huge.
So for some reason, hearing some echo. Okay. So I am thinking about this rubric that Stephanie, my partner, has at our hospital about, you know, trauma-informed decision making. So I'm wondering, is there a rubric that catalytic thinking has, right? A rubric where each modification, introduction of a new idea runs through this specific test where we're all weighing in on how it affects all the different stakeholders and participants and whoever is involved in this. We're asking questions, and it's an open and ongoing experimentation, but is there a core set of things that are really crucial, right, with the rollout of every stage of this that we would be checking in, and also maybe the greater audience and participants could check in and weigh in if it's a survey or something that can just take inputs in a structured way. And then of course, it's not gonna be limited to that, but I'm wondering how do we just continuously get input on the most important things on a regular ongoing basis to build that into the rollout of any of these new arms of this thing.
I'm almost wondering if it is as simple as our going through the questions of catalytic thinking, which are they're the set group of questions that are always the same questions. And so I'm almost wondering if just going through, the first question is, who will be affected by whatever program we come up with? And were they part of this decision? And how were they part of this decision? So having the background of, you know, who was part of forming this program? Let's just talk about this one as a guinea pig. What was the high potential outcome that you saw was possible? What were the conditions for success? And as Justin indicated, you know, what were those conditions and what's still needed? Both the conditions for success for the participants in the program, the conditions for success for us for putting on the program, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe it's just as simple as that, Eli, as going through those questions to say, you know, so talk us through. Talk us through what the thinking was. So that we can ensure that catalytic thinking was part of it. Maybe it's just as simple as that.
Yeah, and having that data live in some system which has maybe even scores, right, for you know all of these things that we're asking, and is continuously updating visually on a dashboard, right? So we can kind of see easily, right, that each of these prongs have been kind of met and addressed, right? So it's not just a long Word document, but something a bit more synthesized and easy to look at and grasp.
Yeah. Or just, as we said last time, or it could just be the conversation. Mm-hmm. It could just be the conversation. I think having something concrete like you're talking about that somebody could just look at is really cool. I mean, you've got my brain going. Especially so I'm thinking about the program that we're talking about where folks would experiment with us. They'd be in a cohort. Part of what's going to be so important at the end of that cohort is that they have some sort of documentation that they can show to others in their organization as they go to experiment in their own organization. So for this particular project, thinking about it through that lens, I work at a, it doesn't matter where, I work at a crisis shelter or a literacy organization or wherever. And I've wanted to think about hiring in a different way. But I every time I bring it up, I get either yelled at or laughed at, or my board doesn't want to do it or whatever. But here I've got some documentation that can show, oh, this is what a group did and here's what it looked like. Here's the questions they asked, so that it can actually give them some of that kind of data-ish thing that you're talking about, Eli. Yeah, it's got my brain going, but I don't know where yet. So what would you all, let's just sort of take what we've talked about so far, that as a support role. Tell us how this furthers our values. Sorry, can you turn that off? In what ways do we see this action advancing the goals and values of creating the future? What would you like to know about this new program? Let's just dive in and try. Let's just play.
I guess I don't think to some of those conditions.
Can barely hear you, Justin.
So I go back to some of those, you know, initial conditions questions. And I guess I also want to just reflect. I think that I really appreciate, Eli, what you're thinking about in terms of sort of capturing the catalytic thinking process. And I think that that's really critical. But I also like to make the think about the distinction that sort of that exists independent of this entity, that it, but it's something that could be shared with. So rather than this entity sort of manufacturing that, which I don't know that that was what you were talking about, Eli, but sort of having this entity, just like any other entity, having that as kind of the quick reference, the kind of cue card for it. But I, you know, I really do think so much of what we're talking about is shifting this whole power decision-making authority dynamic that, and I appreciate the last question you just asked, Hildy, which is, what is it that we need to know and understand, not as a judgment process, but as a learning process and a gut check process. Just this sort of, you know, okay, we're a group of people. When we hear that and we think about what we understand of creating the future, this is what it sparks one way or the other. I think going back to Carl's observation of, you know, what happens if it feels like it's going a little, you know, screwy in a direction. So I do think that have, you know, because I guess some of it is we're talking about how to make this work is, you know, as we think about the those that are sort of tasked with the decision-making, the design, the implementation, whomever or whatever structure that looks like, that there is some process for them to capture the catalytic thinking process. If for no other reason than to be prepared to just provide some highlights in this forum of, or if there is a genuine need of, we need a group of people to think through some of these catalytic questions, then obviously I think that this group has a role in supporting that if it's something that we know enough about, which is always the key question with this. So that was just sort of some reflections, I think, on what Eli was bouncing around, which I think is really, you know, that's a good integrity piece that I think, as we talk about what the organization needs, it needs a means to kind of dashboard the catalytic thinking so that the people who are doing it at whatever level have a clear, easy way to communicate, not only to us, but to any other entity that's curious to see why this program, what was your, I mean, it's, oh God, I was going to say something and I hate that it was coming out of my mouth, but it's reclaiming and recreating the logic model sort of purpose, but we're doing it as a, it's just a dashboard of catalytic thinking.
You know, what you're making me think about, I wish Angie were here. Angie, and for those who don't know Angie is a professor of nonprofit management at the University of Nebraska in Omaha. And Angie recreated, she and I worked together this semester to recreate her master's level fundraising class so that the class itself was rooted in catalytic thinking, so that she used catalytic thinking to design the class and catalytic thinking was content within the class. And as part of, as one of the teaching tools, she created a chart, and I wish I had it to show y'all. But it basically was a chart that she could show her class, so as an example of what did it look like to go through the catalytic thinking questions in designing the class. And she had the question and the answer, 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 just in a very, very simple chart that she showed them. And it was brilliant. It was beautiful. And it could be as simple as that. And what I'm thinking about is not so much that it is a, oh, I've got an assignment, I got to hand this in because the board's going to want to see it, but that it's a great reflection tool for anybody that the board wants to be talking about. You know, you, okay, we're doing three new projects. Let's make sure that those align. It's a great tool for whoever it is that is doing those projects to be able to fill it in. And just a very simple thing.
I also think it, and Justin, really makes me think about the ability for groups who are working to support each other. And if they're, and you know, part of supporting each other is to have a common framework, a common language. And the groups may be very diverse in terms of what they do or what their mission is. But if that framework is there, then you know the integrity function can transcend the board in terms of the framework that they each use, and they could support each other. I found that when doing this, X happens in this part of the framework process. So I think it, there's another layer there dealing with the support between groups that doesn't involve the board directly. But because the structure is there, they could be supporting each other.
It becomes like a communications tool, mm-hmm. which is really what Eli was saying in the first place. So yeah. I am happy to go through if you all would want to know the questions, how catalytic thinking applied to those questions. To this program, or if, as Justin was suggesting, that we dive right in to talk about what are the conditions for success for the program. But those will be covered in my addressing the questions. Does that seem like a way to start? I can just run through it and see how it goes.
Okay. Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
It also records it for the meeting. I'm just thinking in terms of folks coming back.
No, I get it. Later. I get it. Yeah, I wasn't being facetious. So, that first question is who will be affected by this program, and what will it take to involve them in this? And I will say that has actually been the most joyful part of putting this program together. And for any of you that I've spoken with about this program, I probably shared with you, I don't understand how people can create a new program without talking to a bazillion smart people first. And getting their ideas and pulling it all together and having it be from them, not at them. I just don't understand how you can do that. I mean, it's the only way I've ever built programs. Dimitri and I did that when we built the first diaper bank, and that was back in 1998. And I don't understand how you can build something thinking you're the smartest person in the room, going out and doing some research, getting a grant and getting it done. It just makes no sense to me. I spoke to close to 100 people, me personally, one-on-one conversations. They ranged from, again, asking the question of who will be affected. They ranged from anyone who is doing work in social change, and that could be nonprofit and NGO. It could be social enterprise. It could be a business that has a corporation that has a social justice or a social good arm. It even included I am going to get their name wrong. It's ACCP, the Association for Corporate Citizenship Professionals. So folks who do corporate citizenship in Wells Fargo or in Chase Bank or in Unilever or wherever, this is an association for those folks. So spoke with consultants and foundation leaders, spoke with individual activists. anyone who could potentially be looking to do social change work differently, looking to propel social change work forward. Starting about 6 months ago, and I kept folding all of their information into a document and then sending that document back out to all of them saying what thoughts are occurring to you, so to make it as iterative as possible. Starting about 6 months ago, that turned into several teams who have been coming together to talk about this through a variety of different lenses. One of the most interesting lenses was the resourcing lens. How will we resource this? How will we resource what is next for creating the future? Which is still a question we probably want to be asking in terms of conditions for success. But it was the conversations in that group, and Eli, you were part of that group when everybody's head sort of went bing, looking at, as you mentioned, Carl, the strengths we do have, the assets we do have. And the conversation went to, you know, the meetings we have are an asset in and of themselves. And we had, you know, we had talked about the articles in our newsletter and the blogs that we do and our classes and all of that content. It never occurred to any of us that the meetings themselves are so rich with application of catalytic thinking in action. And so it really was this was in, just in that first question, this was entirely designed by people who have been involved and engaged and learning alongside creating the future. Do you guys have any questions at this point, just in terms of the that who's engaged and who's affected? Okay.
Not a question, just to sort of say that seems very sensible in terms of any new program that you would kick off that you would want to invite the people, you are potential sort of participants in the program to sort of shape it.
Justin. Okay.
And then also, how do we know people are engaged, right? How will we know that the engagement is happening? Is there going to be a test, a check of some sort to confirm engagement?
I don't know. Do we want to do that? I mean, do we want to So let me just give a hypothetical. It's not me. It's 10 years from now, I'm gone. Somebody's got a program and they come up and they say, we spoke with 100 people and we had some team meetings and this is, and everything that I just said. Are we talking about doing like a double check on them? Like, okay, how do we know you really talked to 100 people or give us their names? What was the date? I mean, or are we trusting? I mean, I'm not sure where we're.
I mean, that could be it, right? Kind of a list of the people, you know, and their context in which that they're approaching the conversation, right? Back to the dashboard and documentation. I think that could be a good thing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think a big piece of that is making sure, and again, this is coming back to our values. Making sure that is through an equity lens. So were the people who will be affected, was this a diverse group of individuals from a racial lens, from an LGBT lens? Was this I think that's probably more the question that we want to be asking, which we're not going to see through a list of names, but I think that's probably a question we want to be asking.
Yeah, once again, kind of having that rubric, right? Standard systematic approach that anybody could duplicate, right? The process that will, as you said, Hildy, you know, outlive yourself and Dimitri, and anybody can plug and play, you know, with their own, obviously, spin or nuance, but they're going to have something to start with that's pretty easy to follow.
Yeah. That's great. I think that really gets to the that really gets to the heart of our values. That question right there. Okay, you talked to a lot of people. Were they all white men? Were they all cis straight white men? Were they, you know, were they all of a certain age? Were they all blah 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 blah? I think that's a really, really, really we need to be being explicit in that.
So Hildy and Dimitri, as you started to sort of pull this design together, and this is sort of stepping down, I mean, obviously there's sort of levels of effect of the people. I mean, there are people who are directly potentially part of these cohorts, you know, and then there's always the ripple out. And I think there's an appreciation, okay, you've talked to many people in sort of all of those different concentric circles. But if we go to that center circle, the people who are really most directly involved in the operating, the doing of this project, what are some of the highlights in terms of the highest potential outcomes that we're expecting for or from them as a result of participating in this work?
Couple things. One, I just want to mention back to what Carl was saying in terms of potential participants being in that group. It was never the intention that that this be a, hey, come join us. But it has been remarkable how many people have said, oh, can we do that? Can we apply that? Can we, in settings that it never even occurred to me. That, you know, when I was having these conversations, it was to learn and to absorb and to say, okay, here's what we're thinking. You know, are we crazy? Could this, and so it was remarkable to me the way that people were seeing the potential for experimenting with us created I'm going to say the first reaction was probably a combination of excitement and relief. It is scary to experiment on your own stuff when you're doing it in front of people that matter. So whether it is, I want to try something new, I'm telling the board, and the board's going to go, what, are you crazy? Or that's not the way we do it. I spoke with one gentleman who comes out of a corporate environment, very high up corporate, in a very probably, you know, corporate Fortune 50 company, who has been running a literacy organization for the past 10 years, who is arguing with his accountant because his accountant continues to say that the CFO continues to say, but that's not how you do it. The ability to experiment and have evidence to say it can work and here's what it could look like, that was a high potential outcome. If we're looking at changing the systems within social change, the things we invisibly rely on, like accounting, like hiring, people saw immediately, I could tell what was going on in their organization by when I would list the kinds of projects that we were going to do, what they saw as the high potential immediately. Ooh, they would like start cracking up or smile or change their facial expression based on the topic. And so what they were seeing was A, the ability to experiment and they didn't have the risk of it. Eli, I have credited Stephanie so many times for the observation that given the brain science of what we know fear does, the ability to be creative when you don't have to be the guinea pig, when you're not experimenting on yourself, and that it tamps down the fear and that reflexive component of the brain and lets us just be as creative as possible. So that was an interesting high potential, Justin, that had never even occurred to me, is more creativity because they could experiment in a safe environment and it wasn't about them. The ultimate high potential outcome that people saw is even had somebody say, this is the answer to everything that we have been complaining about in this sector for the past 40 years. That we look at all of these internal systems that invisibly guide the work of social change and actually intentionally design something that is intended for creating social change, isn't adapted from the business world or from the military or for something else. And so what folks saw as the potential is them changing things in their own organizations and then the ripple out of could that become the norm? Could we be establishing new norms in the world where it's not you have to know about what a specific organization is doing to go seek them out and find them, but it just becomes the norm of this is how we do things. You know, I was blown away, Vu, when we were talking the other day to Ananda, and RVC is doing such amazing work and training people in such incredible stuff. And if you don't know RVC exists, you don't find it. And just the thought that in systems intentionally designed for creating systems change would become the norm. That really was the high potential outcome that seemed to be bubbling up out of everybody. There seemed to be a general excitement and a general understanding that these are things that are that make no sense and we are told to do anyway. You know, accounting for the dollars and not accounting for impact. I mean, there, right there. That one goes a really long way. That one goes a really long way. The conditions, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I'm just saying that's really amazing. And I was listening to Radiolab on Saturday, and there was a segment about even simply calling something an IQ test drops the performance dramatically. Simply just saying you're taking an IQ test. If we just say, hey, here's a puzzle I want you to take care of, people did better. 4 to 6 points, just the label of the activity can make all the difference. Because we all have these internalized, right, biases about and lenses on things that affect how we relate to them. So yeah, this is amazing to be part of exposing this to everyone.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I wish I had a nickel for every time I have told the fish story, Vu. Jason, for you and for others who may be watching, Vu has told the story of a test that was done, a study that was done of kindergartners, where half the room was told to draw a fish. And they drew all kinds of fish. These little five-year-olds, you know, draw a fish. They drew all kinds of fish. The other half of the room was told, draw a fish. And this is an example of what it might look like. And everybody in the room drew that fish. We get an image in our minds, and that's what it's called. And so when we talk about accounting, we're accounting for the money. We're not accounting for who donated stuff, who's a volunteer, how much of that. And that's just dollars worth. We're not accounting for impact. We're not accounting for societal change. We're just accounting for this one narrow look at the means to accomplish those ends. That fish. Justin, you asked about the conditions, the conditions for success. Couple things. One, the conditions is definitely going to be financial. To get to this point in creating the future's progress, acknowledging that looking back through the lens of hindsight, our first several years were really proof of concept. We were teaching and seeing what people brought out into the world. They were bringing their learnings back. We were applying that. We were doing demonstration projects, and you can do that kind of stuff on a stipend budget and stipend wages and really very, very little funding. It's not fun, but you can. And to the best of our ability, it aligned with our values to not go asking rich people and foundations, please, can we fill out your 900-page form and get a little bit of money? But really looking at scaling this up and scaling our impact is going to look at a different way of looking at things financially. So that was one big condition for success. And doing so in a way that aligns with our values. So that may be something that we want to talk about in a future conversation. This particular program, again, it's an experiment to see if we do this entirely based on contribution. We're all contributing, we're all benefiting. The line that Gail Valeriot brought to us many, many years ago from one of her mentors, please contribute no more than you can afford and no less than you think it's worth. Seeing again how that works in terms of different ways of generating revenue to support the work that we're all going to be doing together through a lens of mutual support, through a lens of all of us together contributing together. The other conditions for success, many of them are steps we have to take and figure out. So hiring and compensation, and what does hiring look like for us? When we apply catalytic thinking to the hiring process and see it through an equity lens, what does a hiring process look like for us? What does a compensation strategy look like for us? If we are to experiment with a living wage minimum salary or a universal salary, a $70,000, $80,000 a year minimum salary, what does that entail? And where does the money come from for that? And how do we resource that? How do we fund that? So those were some of the internal conditions for success. And then one that has been particularly on my mind. I'm always made nervous by a vision that requires one person to be pushing it forward. And at this point, me being the point person, keeps me up at night things as a condition for success is, and it's a separate thing for us to talk about as an integrity body. We've never talked about succession planning. I am, as far as I checked, only a mortal. I do believe at some point that great big bus in the sky will take me. Like all us mortals, we do not ever know when our time is. I have always been acutely aware of that. I have always been a huge proponent of succession. And when Dimitri and I were building the diaper banks years ago, it was very easy to say, this is a thing, this is a commodity, this is a thing that's easy for somebody else to step into. One of the conditions for success as we build this into something that is considerably bigger, that makes me a little nervous, my own condition for success is knowing that it doesn't have to rely on me. And that means additional staff now, and it means that we eventually talk about taking this stuff out of my head and somehow having some sort of, you know, I hate the word succession planning, but transitioning. Right now, and we're talking, I know, a lot of internal conditions for success, and I really would like to talk about for the participants, but I went down this rabbit hole. Right now, the work that's being done by primarily me and Dimitri and a core of amazing volunteers is not sustainable as it currently exists. We can do it for now, but if we are to grow the impact, transitioning out of many of the roles that the volunteers, including us, are doing and transitioning into staff? What does that look like? What does it look like for them to learn, for us to hire, for us to, so just all of those bigger questions. And so I know that internally those are two that have come up for me. And I don't usually start with the internal first, but they've been sort of high on my mind. The external, the conditions for success for the participants is delightfully going to be designed by them. If in talking to folks, it became clear they need the time and the space, the safety to be able to experiment and explore, and they need options for how to do so. They need to know that if they want to dive in and be part of a cohort, that they can, but if they don't have time, that they can just like subscribe and get updates and get reports and have stuff that they can show to their board or whatever. And the other conditions for success will be defined by them in every cohort, which seems the only way to do it. And I've just babbled a whole lot, so you guys go. And I guess the question I would have is, does that kind of stuff help? Is it too much information? As we're honing the how we want to know if something is aligned with our values thing, if it's fitting with catalytic thinking.
What do you mean by too much information?
I don't know. I just babbled a whole lot of stuff. I have no idea if any of it fits with what the integrity group would want to know. In terms of some future person coming in and saying, hopefully by then we have. I love the idea of some kind of form, Eli, that gives sort of a script of, okay, here's the kinds of things we're going to want to know. But yeah.
The things that I think about are purpose and vision within an organization. And we can switch the mic.
Yeah.
An organization is not even the right word. Within a movement, what's the target? What are you moving toward? Target's probably the wrong word to use, but what do you want to accomplish? The word that comes to mind is like a constitution, having a set of, and this is Eli talking about what you were saying, in thinking about it, in the sense of guiding principles, guiding documents that allow transcendence. And when you're talking about, Hilde, succession planning, you're really looking at what allows this objective to transcend a personality, and that's that's the thought that comes to my mind is how do you create a system that allows for easy transcendence and for new growth, so it isn't it must be done exactly like this every time or whatever, that there is an opportunity to take those values and those ideas and move them forward. So a condition of success is clarity of that and simplicity of that. What makes it easy for a new program to plug into that, and then entities, be they some of the examples that you were giving earlier, Hilde, be they a corporate structure, a for-profit structure, be it a movement, be it a social cause entity, be it a diaper bank. How does it, plug into this in a way that is both clear, easy, and allows it to grow in terms of what it's doing? So it is, really is a way of transcending.
For some reason, I'm thinking about Switzerland, where every government official only has a year to be in their position, right? So people either love it or hate it. Well, it's not enough time to create an impact, but also it means that, you know, there's this freshness of leadership coming in. So I was part of the Rotary Club, and there also the president is, you know, it serves for a year. So could that be something that we do where obviously decentralized is great, but there's something special about having somebody who's at the helm, you know, even if it's for a certain amount of time. So I think that could be really valuable to have this rotating kind of leadership position where somebody is passing the baton and we're maybe selecting a person under conditions which we'll agree upon using catalytic thinking to ensure this constant, right, experimentation in a sense, right? That leader is an experiment for that 12-month, 6-month, quarter period, while having somebody also kind of carrying responsibility for all the different things that happen.
There's going to be so much for us to talk about just around that whole sense of transitioning. I see Angie is joining us. Wonderful. Bring you up to speed on where we've been. We've been sort of diving in, and I shouldn't even say we've been murking our way through, trying to figure out the role of this integrity body in action. With the video that I had shared with you all about the program that we're looking at devising for creating a future, and sort of walking through the questions of catalytic thinking. I've been doing a lot of talking. It's never a great thing. and we've just sort of been making our way through.
I guess I have a question, Hildy, and I appreciate you've been doing a lot of talking, and that was part of what I was saying at the top, which was some of these questions, there's a onerous burden on you or whomever is in the design thinking of it. Because I think that's the only way we know is from the source. But you know, one of the things that has been a key element around the catalytic thinking, particularly when it comes to organizational design thinking, is the systems and structure. And I guess some of this is an order of operations question, as you talked about, and a strong recognition of there does need to be financial resources for compensation. And you talked a little bit about sort of the stone soup idea of contributions. And I guess, and then you also talked about the burden of volunteerism or the structural default or the structural faults of the volunteerism right now. So I guess some of this is a little bit of that order of operations as you've thought about the rolling out of this, is there the idea that we're sort of, you know, continuing that volunteer and overly taxed Hildy and Dimitri model to get to that point of kind of startup of this program with then the intent that the stone soup starts to kick in and we start to see some of those financial resources to then be able to make that, you know, staffing infrastructure transition. I'm just trying to get a sense because you sort of spoke to all the different pieces of that. And I guess, is there an arc of order of operations that you see that we should be asking about in the future to see if it's progressing the way as it was expected?
The easy answer is yes. The easy answer is, yeah, we will probably keep doing what we're doing, the way that we're doing it, short of something else coming along. As we build and develop the stone soup of it. Acknowledging though that I think we as a board, so I'm wearing about 6 different hats, need to really talk about what funding looks like, what resourcing looks like if it is aligned with our values. And, you know, it's been a huge, it's been a huge conversation for as long as there's been Creating the Future. And it's really easy to say, you know what, you and Dimitri really need to get paid for what you're doing, and you really need help, and you really need to get funding, and go figure it out. Versus, is this an integrity question that we as a integrity body, forget board, as an integrity body, is this a question that we want to tackle? What does resourcing look like if it aligns with our values? You know, I will tell you, I've been struggling with that question since there's been a Creating the Future. I also, from a resourcing perspective, know that to do things that, even if we did things that didn't align with our values, when you're in startup mode, so I'm going back years, when you're in startup mode, you don't get funded. You get a bone thrown to you. You get go away money. You get, that's very cute, when you prove yourself, come back. And so you put in as much work as you would, and this is my funding rant that will one day become a funding manifesto. You put in as much work trying to raise the money and report back on the money and fill out the applications to get the money, whether you're talking about a venture capitalist or you're talking about a foundation. You spend as much time trying to raise the money to do the work, which means that you don't have time to do the work. And we chose to do the work. We chose to say, you know, we will have classes. We will teach people what revenue comes in from that. We fortunately had a background in consulting where we knew sort of the mechanisms of what does it take to have an earned income stream, have what donations you can. But you really wind up in an ethical conundrum if you don't want to be going, please, sir, can I have another dime? So it is a question that I think as an integrity body, I would love to see us tackle because it's a big one. But to answer your question directly, Justin, we will build this as we've built everything, and then hopefully the stone soup will kick in and will at least provide us enough to hire our first hire. And that first hire will probably be an operations coordinator to start coordinating all the operations of Creating the Future, which is not my brilliance, not where I should be. Other questions? These are good, by the way. These are good questions.
What I'm wondering is how, you know, we've got a meeting here that has people from literally all over the planet. How do we allow new participants, viewers, whatever, to come up to speed quickly? Now, one of those, come up to speed on the thinking, because many of the things you were just saying, Hilde, I mean, I know the backstory. I know, and most of the board knows all the backstory. You know, what are we talking about when we're talking about funding? You know, what are we talking about when we're talking about the conundrums? What are we talking about? And it is so, you know, I try to put myself into the place of someone walking into this, watching this for the first time, and it's like you're talking in code. And there is so much information, it's accessible, it's not hidden. They can go back and watch 5 years worth of meetings and get all caught up, you know, in terms of where we are. But, you know, I'm just thinking, how do we convey this to make this as impactful as possible? So what Eli was talking about in terms of a rubric or a way of, you know, I know that we were, in the past, we were starting our meetings with our mission statement. that people could hear a little bit about who we are and why we are and what we're doing. So I don't have an answer to that, but it's just a question in my mind is, you know, how do we explain what we mean? You know, yeah, you've been in an entity for 10 years. You know, you've never asked for a grant. You've never gone out and done this. Well, that's weird. You know, why haven't you done that? Don't you want to succeed? Don't you? Yeah, I mean, I'm just putting in the first impressions that someone who is swimming in that water that doesn't know that there is something else other than that. So.
Thank you for that.
So possibly building upon what Dimitri just said, I guess the question I have for myself is that do I have to unlearn the questions I would normally have at this point when someone said, I've got an idea and we're going to do this stuff? Because at this point, normally I'd probably start with that question that Dimitri asked about, okay, well, what's the vision? And then I'd sort of be thinking about, okay, well, what are the outcomes that you want to achieve and what's your theory of change? what are the activities and the outputs that are going to deliver these changes that you want to see? Because I suspect that's how a lot of people in our sort of sector sort of think. And then I'd be starting to sort of almost think, okay, well, and what's the plan then for kicking off so that we can deliver this stuff? So I guess I'm, at the risk of being the naughty child in the class, I'm continuing from Dimitri and asking on behalf of maybe people who are watching and saying, so am I thinking about it the wrong way? And do we need to think about it a different way? Because I'm fully bought into catalytic thinking, but we still need planning.
Catalytic thinking does lead to planning. So, I mean, catalytic thinking is, in essence, a planning conversation. You know, it starts with people. It goes to what do you want to achieve? That's the high potential outcome. It asks, what are the conditions for success, which are what will it take to get that outcome? It asks, what are the actions you'll take to create those conditions? And what do you need internally in order to create that? It actually was designed originally, Carl, as a planning tool. And what became interesting was when we would teach it as a planning tool and people would say, you know what, I used that the other night when I was in a conversation with my husband. And here's what happened. And it was from that we realized that it was more than that, that it was a way of thinking, which is what planning is. It's a way of thinking. So it's remarkable. And it, you know, gets back to Dimitri having, you know, a million years of history with this.
So this is a bit of an aside, but what, and I know I often get in trouble for those, but what I wanted to, what popped in my mind was the old TV series, The Beverly Hillbillies. And what, the reason it popped into my mind was at the beginning of every show, you had the song that told you the story of how they got there, of what it was. So, and-
Please don't sing.
I'm not, I promise. But what it made me think about is, you know, it's sort of the, you know, last week on Creating the Future, last meeting on Creating the Future, you know, a little, and I'm, you know, I'm not volunteering to do this, but I'm thinking something like that is where I was going with that. And, you know, Carl's question of, is this, do I need to relearn this? Do I need to whatever? Well, this kind of brings you at least up to speed as to what we're about and what we're doing. So I don't, and I know I'm kind of going back to something I mentioned earlier, but that's the thought that popped into my mind. It is almost a little ditty that allows you to literally be up to speed on this week's episode in terms of whatever that is.
The $6 million as well, if you remember, Dimitri.
I wanted to actually just share a reflection because it's kind of relevant in this space.
Could you speak up, Justin? I'm sorry.
Sure. Well, so this is not just in this space, but in some others. So like Carl, Dimitri, when you first answered that question, I'm like, well, you're asking the wrong question. You know, it's like, but I appreciate, Carl, what you're saying is that people are going to come in wanting these answers. But it does raise a bigger issue, because I have a couple of organizations I'm working with. I'm working with the traditional boards. And I have had several say, Justin, we can't think about this anymore. We just need to get to an answer. And I keep saying, well, if you don't know the answer yet, you haven't thought enough about it. Like I can't tell you the answer. Like, the reason you can't answer it is because you haven't answered the preliminary questions. You haven't figured out the conditions that you're trying to assuage. So, you know, should we do this? Should we hire this person? You know, Justin, we don't want you telling us to ask another question about who we are and what we want to accomplish. We just want to know, like, should we do this or not? And I share that because I think part of what we've talked about, and probably part of what I've even been advocating, is increasing the tolerance for this inquiry, not the navel-gazing inquiry, but really trying to say, what are the pieces of data I need to know or understand to be able to make the decision? And I think that so, you know, again, tying back to what Eli said of having something that kind of at least triggers in us that this question was considered, we don't even necessarily need to know exactly what the answer was or understand the answer. And in fact, I hope we're in spaces where something comes up and I'm like, I got no friggin' idea whether that's the right thing to do, but I appreciate that it seems like you asked the right questions. And when you put all the pieces together, it makes sense to me. That, and it really does echo back to this creating the forum for the conversation that, like, I don't want it to be an echo chamber. I don't want it to be navel gazing, but I also, like, there is a point of sort of figuring out how we let go of power and control to just say, yes, we trust that the process, like, I mean, I feel like, okay, Hildy, what you said to me today in this meeting, said, okay, it sounds like she's done due diligence around who's involved, what is it gonna take? I'm not sure I have it all figured out, but I feel like that's it. And like, I'm sort of at a point of saying, okay, what's your confidence level based on all of that, that this is doable? and what else would you need to know, or in what way can we be an asset? Can I be an asset? Because, so I just share that because I think, you know, Carl, you hit a nerve for me, but it's something I'm really running up against. And I don't actually know how to navigate it either, which is sort of this, give us an answer. How do we make a decision? We don't want to think about what it takes to figure out that decision. I don't know if anybody else can help me answer that, but how to deal with that.
Yeah. Well, it is a, it is a very capitalist, white supremacist way of thinking. It is a very colonial, we have the answer, here it is, now let's get moving, way of thinking. And it is so embedded from the time we are toddling that unlearning that way of thinking is what the work is. And understanding that it is a way. You know, Eli, I loved the other day we were in a conversation and you mentioned a book that you were reading by Charles Eisenstein about talking about the tribe in South America that has no conception of time. It's it's a completely different way of thinking about things. So yeah, I think there's it's a big, huge unlearning for all of us.
Speaking of time, you know, Jason is in a place where I feel like they're in a different kind of like a time, you know, time about, you know, it's a different way of being in life. It's slower, it's more relaxed. So Jason, wondering what your thoughts are kind of looking at this from the outside, right? How does any of this kind of like land with you right now? Anything you can kind of bring from a Hawaiian perspective to the discussion?
Well, I mean, I could go off on a tangent on different angles. You know, for the most part, I'm just trying to absorb what your progress so far and see how we can fit it into Hawaii's way of doing things, which is challenging for some reasons. And maybe I'll speak to that, is that, you know, when we're talking about, I guess, integrity and values, that's the struggle here, because we have a lot of different, we're so diverse here that our values don't always align, and finding the way forward in speaking to different groups trying to collaborate to create change together, I think is an important discussion that's kind of being discussed here. How do you do that? How do you create that framework when not all of your values align, and what that means to being having integrity in the decisions you're making and the actions you're taking moving forward when some people actually don't want change? And yet we're not at a place that most people would consider even adequate. And so when you're trying to move forward and be innovative, and some people want to actually go backwards to yesterday, these are very challenging topics to discuss. And so I think what the work being talked about here and your the framework you're trying to put together is very important.
Thank you. I know we're not an easy group to get a word in edgewise. So Eli, thank you for inviting Jason into that conversation.
No, not at all. I'm absorbing a lot, and I've taken a lot of notes today. So actually, thank you, Eli, for the invite.
Yeah, appreciate you being here, Jason.
Angie, putting you on the spot, any thoughts occurring to you as we're, I know that you just came in.
Yeah, sorry if I'm repeating everything. Sorry for being late. My awesome is my student successfully defended her dissertation proposal. That's why I was late. I was just thinking about that we have a, you know, catalytic thinking process, and I guess I'm just thinking about trusting the process, and so using that process and then determining what we want to focus on first, and just getting that conversation going, and but having not just us part of the conversation, but inviting people who already are active and understand kind of about creating the future, maybe to be the first people to be inviting in. And, you know, to Dimitri's point of helping other people get up to speed, that's, I think, great too, but that shouldn't keep us from just getting started. Yeah. Those are my thoughts.
Thank you. I'm reflecting on the questions that you just posed, Justin. And it really comes to so much of what both Jason just said and Carl, what you began with. Is we're finding our way. We're finding our way about something that we've been struggling as a society with for a while, and are hopefully over the past year more mindfully and intentionally stepping into unraveling. But you asked, Justin, how do we let go of power and control? It's like, you know, right there. And I think I think part of what we're looking for is a rhythm of how these conversations would go. And that's that I think gets back to Eli having a sort of a repeatable frame of these are the questions that we ask and this, or this is the question that here's the questions we want you to be able to present when you're coming and we're having a conversation about, oh, there's a new project or a new thing going on. If let's say we have a cohort that talks about hiring and compensation and we come up with something, we're going to want to come back to this integrity body and say to the world, basically, that's what we're doing here. We're saying it to the world, is this walks the talk of our values. And having, you know, for lack of a better word, a rubric, having a list of, yes, we asked these questions and here's what we came up with, to be able to present that to the world and say, yes, it aligns with catalytic thinking. Yes, that aligns with our values. Which allows anybody who's designing programs ensures that they're thinking about that, reinforces that they're thinking about that. And then, Dustin, I really love your questions. What is your confidence level that this is doable? What else do you feel you need in terms of conditions for success? And what can we as a board be doing, or as an integrity body, or as a group of people who care about this? What further conversations, you know, the question that popped for me, because this was the first, and we are stepping into a new program, was what further conversations does this body need to be having that we haven't had? And the two, as I mentioned, that really came up for me was some sort of transition, succession thinking, and around integrity and funding. But I think that those, in terms of a rhythm for how these conversations can go, those conversations of starting with the catalytic thinking questions, I love the question, what's your confidence level that this is doable? You know, it hopefully by the time it gets to this stage is pretty strong. But you know, talking it out loud to a group sometimes makes you go, ooh, wait a minute, I hadn't thought about that. As well as what other internal conditions do you need? Person who's doing this or group who's gonna go forth and do this? And what might we be doing to either help or to, are there questions that we haven't considered in the past that we as an integrity body need to be considering? That rhythm sort of feels right. And if I were to have a reflection right now, it is that, oh my God, do I feel sorry for Jackie taking the notes on all of this and trying to follow where the hell we're going. How are you all feeling? Let's just start with process-wise. How are you all feeling about that as a process for future conversations? That we start with that list of questions and sort of almost a report. It could just be a written report that comes. Angie, I was touting the form that you created when we were designing your class and that you then provided to the class. I thought that was, A, it was brilliant as a teaching tool, but could easily be is something that is presented in writing so that we could all be looking at it at the same time. And then asking those questions. You know, walk us through a little bit of your thinking on this. Are you confident that this is doable? If you're not, what do you further need? What can we do to help? How do you all feel about that as a process, at least initially starting out?
That seems sort of broadly sensible to me. I was just thinking about the questions that Justin asked and the questions that we got about the conditions for success. I guess what I'm just thinking out aloud is that almost sort of feels like those questions almost feel like we haven't got any agency and that we are not able to shape our own success. And I wonder if we need questions that draw out the agency that we've got and the strengths that we've got, i.e. tell us what are the assets and the strengths that we've got that are going to make this, that are going to contribute to this success. And then what falls after that is, okay, well, what are the other things in the external environment that are, or conditions that we need to build upon the strengths that we've got?
Yeah. Anyone else? How is this feeling?
Hi everyone. This is Vu. Sorry, I it's Monday and I get really exhausted staying up writing and everything. So my apologies. Also, I'm trying to just learn to be more reflective and observing because I'm extremely opinionated, and so I think this has been challenging for me because I feel like there is a bunch of things we need to unlearn. I mean, the nonprofit sector is not working, philanthropy is not working, capacity building is not working, and everything. And so we're trying to do things a little bit differently. So, and at the same time, I feel like I do get frustrated when we're like, what is the problem that we're trying to solve right now, right? And how are we gonna do it? How are we gonna go about it systemically? So just from this conversation, like we've had several things that were identified. One is succession planning, right? Another one is fundraising. How do we do it in a way that aligns with our value and we're not sucking up to rich white people in foundations? That's another one. Also, this program that Hildy is proposing, how do we actually start that? Another one is hiring. How do we do that in a way that's equitable and not replicating white supremacy in hiring practices, right? So there's quite a few things, and there are a few solutions like Eli proposing that we each take a year to lead, right? So I think this non-linear approach that we're trying is in some ways really great, and I appreciate it. And at the same time, I also get frustrated because like sometimes I kind of need things to be linear. Like I need to know where we are going and what we're gonna do about this, right? And I think another problem that I want to surface that maybe we haven't talked about much is I do feel like we need to, I don't know, this, I haven't really formulated my entire thoughts on this, but I do feel like we intellectualize a lot, and it oftentimes does, we kind of veer into this territory of being like a, you know, like Moses coming down the mountain sort of like approach, where it seems like, I mean, we all love catalytic thinking, but we're here in a room sort of intellectualizing about it. We're trying to not do that, and we're trying to go down and bring this to the people, right? But the more we step on the mountain, the more talking about how we should bring this to the people, the more the people on the ground are like, oh my God, there's just so much stuff going on right now. And I think we got to think about like, what is it? Do we even have the right information about what people are really focused on right now? I mean, right now we have like Indigenous children who were murdered by white Canadians administrators. We have Black people who are still being killed. We have like the Tulsa massacre and the legacy of that. And our sector is starting to grapple with like how we are complicit in these things. And I'm wondering how catalytic thinking could be used to address these sort of like very urgent systemic problems that people are Palestine right now, with children being murdered. I mean, there's a ceasefire, but that's not, you know, I kind of feel like we have to really get catalytic thinking to be relevant to the world's problems right now. And I think, and so we're going to build this into the program or whatever. I think that's another problem that we need to think about is like, is this approach what we should be doing? Is forming a program what we should be doing, right? Maybe it isn't. Maybe it is for us to just create a community and let people figure out what kind of programs they need. So I'm grappling with all of these things because they're all of them combined into like, and so what happens is that we end up just talking about everything and feeling like maybe we are not getting to where we're supposed to be. And at the same time, I'm like, maybe that's exactly what we should be doing, is to trust the process and let it be nonlinear. So I'm just reflecting out loud right now. And so that's what I'm thinking.
I think you're articulating what's in a lot of our brains. A lot of our brains and a lot of our hearts. And I think that when a couple of years ago we defined the structure of this organization as a platform for people to apply catalytic thinking to whatever and get the resources and the support to be able to do that, it's exactly what at least I envisioned, is that if someone is working on, whether it is racism here or Palestine or dealing with the effects of Brexit or dealing with whatever, that they have the support to do so. I sort of see the only answer as being yes and. And it's uncomfortable. And I guess that's, the realization that it feels clunky and uncomfortable when we're dealing with seven different realities. There's the reality we don't like. There's the reality we want to go to. There's the reality we live in our heads that reacts to the one we don't like and likes the one. There's so many different versions of reality that we're all living at the same time. And that feels clunky and it feels uncomfortable. And thank you for that, Boo. Which steps us right into time for reflection. And oh my gosh, today. What is standing out to you from our time together today?
I'll kick off. First of all, that was hard. And my excuse is that it's 8 p.m. in the evening here in the UK, so it's the end of the day for me, so just thought I'd get that in there. Secondly, in the nicest possible way, we are so dependent upon you, Hildy. And I think what we're seeing, it feels to me like what we're seeing are the sort of the first, when you sort of talk about, a transition and so on, we're so used to you leading us that we are going to have to unlearn how to take it. We have to unlearn how the fact that we always take a steer from you, I think.
Justin, what's standing out to you?
I personally think I over-reflected today, so.
Can you speak up just a little?
I was gonna say, I think I over-reflected today. I'm gonna take a cue from you and a little bit more in. But I think it's a little, it's messy trying to live in a space of inquiry that moves things forward. I think the biggest thing for me.
Eli?
No, totally agreed. How challenging this all is. But I'm also inspired that, right, the milestones are being accomplished, and that we're hitting kind of like the core things that need to happen to move forward. So going back to kind of what Vu said, though, it's going to be great to kind of see this in action and start to like play with this in real life. So looking forward to the first kind of few elements of the propagation starting to happen. And I'm so once again privileged to be working with all of you today.
No, us. We are.
Thank you.
Dimitri.
You know, I'm just thinking about this process, which is very difficult, or not, because there is no right way. I mean, there is no, it is a process, and it, I don't know if it shifts or molds or whatever, but it's constantly adjusting itself to the people in the room and their experiences, along with the different realities you were talking about, Hildy. So, you know, I think about, you know, which reality are we addressing here? And I also think about, from a personal sense, how much of my reaction to it is reflexive. You know, I grew up with stuff that was, this is the way it is, and was a proponent of that for a long time because I knew no other way. And I didn't even know that there was the possibility of another. And so it is a, you know, it is a process, and it is something. So that is my reflection, is that it is a process, and that I know it's worth it. It's just not easy going through it.
Yeah. Thank you. Angie, for what little time that you were able to be with us.
Yes. Just to say quickly, building on that, Dimitri and what Jason said earlier really struck me about some people don't feel comfortable or really want to change, and in part, I guess, because change is hard and painful sometimes. And I mean, that's something to, yeah, keep in mind.
Thank you. Jason, how about you? What's standing out to you from our conversation today? And I'm so glad you were here. I'm really so glad you were here.
Yeah, I think I'm just grateful that there's groups like this and people like you, people that are working on hard subjects. I mean, if people just, you know, gave up and said, somebody else can do it, or we'll just let things happen, then, you know, we'd make less progress in this world. So thank you for doing what you're doing, and thank you for having me today.
Thank you, Jason. How about you, Jackie? Anything standing out to you? Rather, in addition to, I don't know how to write this. You probably do, though. You're so good.
Yeah, I guess the thing that's standing out to me is that very early on in today's meeting, Hildy, I think you asked the question of, is it as simple as just using catalytic thinking? And I mean, I guess we'll see once I type up the notes, but kind of where I'm leaving this conversation is that the answer is yes. And how do we let it be that simple? And how do we really say, we trust this process, we trust catalytic thinking, and it can be catalytic thinking, and that can be the answer to some of these questions.
Thank you. I love how clearly you see. It's very clear in what you write, so thank you for that. The thought that is standing out to me, I moved to Tucson, Arizona, a very long time ago, 41 years ago. And the thing that was striking to me then in a growing community, very quickly growing community, was that the vision that most Tucsonans had for our sleepy little burg was that we don't want to be Phoenix. Phoenix is a behemoth. It is an LA wannabe. It is sprawling. It has got freeways everywhere. They don't ask, they just do. And our vision was, we don't want to be Phoenix. We didn't know what we did want to be, but we knew what we didn't want to be. And a big piece of what we see throughout the social change ecosystem right now is we know what we don't want to be. We don't want to keep doing what we were doing, but we don't have a thing to go to. We don't have a what we do want. And so we keep going back to the old systems. I mean, even if those old systems are just, you need to work in the office, you can't work from home. We keep going back to the old ways because we don't have a new way to go to. And we know that as a board that we don't wanna quote, be what the board is. And we know that we don't wanna be, I'm so glad for the words you use, Justin, about power and control. We don't wanna be, but there is no example out there in the world of what we are going to, what we want to be. We've sort of defined what that is, but none of us have the picture of that fish in our heads. None of us can envision what that thing is. And that's what the struggle is that in between phase of we know what we don't want, we sort of have a sense of what we do want, but we don't have a concrete, we don't know what it looks like. It's like, you know, envisioning the perfect mate, you know, we don't have the sense of, so when they walk up to us on the street, we don't know it's them because we just don't have that kind of ability to see it. And that is wrangling. That is, you know, in the words of this is normal, this is normal. And I do really trust that this process, these conversations will get us there. I also really appreciate Vu concretizing the list of things that we had talked about that maybe we need to grapple with next. Because we don't have another program that we're going to be describing and seeing if it fits. Maybe it's time for us to start talking about some of these other issues that are in answer to your question, Justin, of what else, as building a program, what else we need internally. Maybe it's time to start talking about some of those. And we can do that at our next meeting. I will share with you that I'm not going to be here in July. Neither Dimitri nor I will be here in July. I don't know about the rest of you, but we'll be traveling. We're going to be able to see our baby. We're going to meet our granddaughter. So if you all want to get together and start talking, we can deal with this, on via email, but I'm just feeling deeply grateful for the conversation today. This is mind bending and it is unlearning and it is knowing sort of kind of where we're going, but not really. And we don't have a roadmap because nobody's ever been there before. And I deeply appreciate being on this journey with you all. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. See everybody later.
Thank you, everybody.